This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
At your service, it's the Garden Hotline, sponsored by Chesterfield Valley Nursery, a celebration of His beauty on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Good morning. It's the Garden Hotline. My name is Michelle Reeser-West. I am your host, Director of Horticulture for Pointer Landscape here in St. Louis. And we're here this morning to answer any of your garden-related questions. We're going to talk about a lot of things. It's the new year, so happy new year to everybody out there. I hope you had a safe holiday. So, I mean, now it is time to turn our attention to this growing season that's coming up. If you guys want to talk about it, 314-436-7900 is the number to call or text with any questions that you might want to talk about. Last week we were really talking about how this time of year for everybody is a time for, you know, reflection and a time for planning and maybe setting some goals. And that's no different for us as gardeners. And, you know, we talk a lot about our garden journal, which that is actually one of my resolutions this year is to, you know, every year I say I'm going to do a better job of keeping up with my garden journal. And I do great in January, I think, like a lot of us do. This time of year, we, you know, the first few weeks, we're sticking to our resolutions and doing a good job with that. And it kind of dwindles off. And for me, it kind of happens because as the year goes on, spring gets here, my life as a, you know, professional horticulturist is very seasonal. So, you know, right now is a slow time. I have plenty of time to keep notes in my journal and reflect. But as the spring gets here, things really start getting busier and busier. And I don't always make time for that. And this year, that's going to be my resolution is to keep better tabs on that gardening journal. But, you know, just also reflecting back over 2025, you know, just thinking about where we were even this time last year. I don't know if you guys remember or not, but right at the beginning of 2025, we had a huge snowstorm that came through and St. Louis got, you know, around 12 inches of snow. And it was kind of a crazy start to the new year last year. I'm kind of grateful that that's not happening to us right now, but I do love some snow, so I wouldn't be against it. But yeah, that snow came in January. You know, we had a really average spring temperature wise. I think actually it lasted, you know, those cooler temperatures lasted a lot longer than it normally does. We had some crazy weather March, April, and May with tons of tornadoes. In March, we had, I think it was 12 tornadoes that touched down in our area. And we had some, I think, 9 in April. And then, of course, May, we all know that we had that huge, massive tornado that started in Clayton and went through Forest Park and North St. Louis City that just completely devastated our communities and our interest mostly are those trees that were so devastated by that tornado. And people are still, you know, cleaning up from that. You drive through Forest Park, you drive through North City, and there's still, you know, a massive amount of cleanup going on and rebuilding from that all the way back into May. You know, summertime, talking about those cooler temperatures, we didn't get something above 90 degrees until the middle of May. Which was the latest first 90 degree day since mid 90s. And we also didn't have a single day over the summer that was over 100 degrees, which was also not common here. So 0 100 degree days in the last year. Of course, we all as gardeners remember the severe drought that we had across the state and in the Metro St. Louis area. It was actually, you know, classified as a severe drought that was followed or ended by a huge rainfall that didn't happen really until the beginning of October. So we just really struggled through that growing season, or at least I did, keeping plants watered, keeping our veggies watered. Was a lot of work this summer if you didn't have irrigation systems set up. So, you know, and then we got into fall. We had a really phenomenal time in November looking for those northern lights, which is something that, you know, that is very rare for us here in St. Louis. So if you got a chance to see those, that was super exciting. November, we had some snow, some colder temps. We actually, you know, finally got at the end of October, November, some really great fall color, which we weren't expecting from that drought. And then on into December. Now we know that KMOX celebrated its 100th birthday. And we actually just recently had the record for not only the daily record, but it was the warmest December temperature on record. We had 78 degrees on the 28th, which was wild. And then what was even wilder was that cold front that moved in. And the next day, I think we got down to 15 degrees or something like that. So 2025, when you look at it like that, and I'm sure I'm missing some things, was kind of a crazy year. You know, I said that 2024 was my hardest career year, and I think 2025 easily surpassed that. You know, last year we were really just worried about those cicadas and the cicada damage, and there was so much more this year that we had to contend with in terms of gardening and pest and disease issues because of all of those temperatures and water and then lack of water. So just kind of a crazy year out in the gardening world. One of the hardest, you know, we had some things that did really well because of, you know, those conditions. And, you know, we had a lot of things that didn't do so well. So if you guys want to call and talk about what went well in your garden this year, you know, or what didn't go so well, maybe we can talk about a plan to make that better. You know, one of the things for me that didn't go well this spring was when I was out weeding my vegetable garden, and I also had a pair of hand pruners out for some reason, and I accidentally chopped the stem of my tomato plant all the way down to about 6 inches, which was just devastating because it was, you know, in flower and doing so well. So I had to start over. But that was probably my lowest point in my own personal garden this year, was just the sadness of making that mistake. But, you know, part of gardening is about making mistakes. And even, you know, myself as a professional gardener, I kill things. I, you know, do things wrong. I have to look things up on Google sometimes. I have to ask a friend. And that's part of why I love this, you know, this profession and this passion of mine of gardening, is that there's always so much to learn, and there's, you know, 100 different ways of doing one thing. And speaking with you guys on the radio, and, you know, I get to come into contact with my clients and coworkers and people that share this industry with me. And I am constantly, you know, asking how people are doing things. What tools are you using? What are you seeing out there? And it's just a community that shares information very willingly. And I just really like that about us. And I like that continued educational component of gardening. And I'm looking for more of that in this 2026. So again, if you guys want to call and talk about your garden or your plans for 2026, I am all ears. 314-436-7900. Again, if you're not interested in calling, give us a text. I'm happy to answer your questions in that way. We are going to take a quick break. You're listening to the Garden Hotline on 104.1 KMOX.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is the Garden Hotline, sponsored by Chesterfield Valley Nursery, a celebration of his beauty on 104.1 FM KMOX.
We are back to the Garden Hotline. My name is Michelle Reeser-West. I am the director of horticulture for Pointer Landscape, and I am here today answering questions about your garden. 314-436-7900 is the number to call or text in with any of your questions. We got a caller in over the break. Linda, welcome to the Garden Hotline. How's it going?
Oh, fine. Thank you.
What's going on, Linda?
I just have a suggestion of a good tool for older gardeners. I'm going to be 73 in a couple of weeks, so I am qualified as an older gardener. And our garden club had a show and tell of tools in May, and this one lady brought in a thing called Grandpa's Weeder. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
I have.
You have?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really good. I got one. Walmart has them. I think other places, Ace Hardware places, have them. And you just put this kind of claw in around some of those weeds that have such deep roots. I don't know if that's mulberry that comes up, some of those weeds that just come up in the garden all the time, probably from birds, bring the seeds.
Of course.
And put it in, and it's got a little arm that you just, lean back on, and it pulls the entire root out. And then you've eliminated the weed forever.
I love this. Thank you so much for calling in and sharing that. Again, like I was saying, I love tools. It's so much easier to garden when you have the proper tool. So I went, on the break, and I Googled it just so I could remember what it was. And this thing is great. It's got a long wooden handle, and it's been around forever. And like Linda said, it's got almost these little claw prongs at the bottom. But what I like about this tool is that it really pulls the entire weed out. So things like dandelions or mulberries, like you were saying, is sometimes those weeds that just have that really long taproot where sometimes you go out there and pull on them and they break off and you know that there's that long taproot still down in there. But the bending over part, the back breaking part of weeding, looks like it's a really helpful tool for that.
Oh, yeah, it's really good. And I never thought about it for dandelions, but that's a great idea because I do bend over, one of those little garden tools, hand tools.
Yep.
To get those out or just pull them, before the seeds spread all over. But yeah, that's a good suggestion too. So I just thought I'd call in with that today.
Thank you, Linda. And I really appreciate it.
I wish you a happy new year too.
Thanks, Linda. You too. All right, guys. Great suggestion for tools. Again, that's one of my favorite things to talk about with other gardeners is what tools they are using. So if you guys have any other suggestions for tools that you use, that's a great one. Again, that was called Grandpa's Weeder. And I just Googled it again and it came up. And I do believe I've seen it around town. I'm sure some of your local garden centers might have it. But there is a website for it just called grandpasweeder.com. G-R-A-M-P-A. Grandpasweeder.com is that tool. But it looks pretty great. I've actually never used one. I've seen them around. I've seen other people using them. But I have heard very good things about them. You guys, more questions can be asked, 314-436-7900. And, we were talking a little bit before the break about resolutions, and mine was to use that gardening journal, a little bit more. Just wondering if you guys have any resolutions for your gardening in 2026. Another one could be, you know, not buying any new plants or seeds. You know, it's almost time. It's January. January, February is a busy time if you're sowing your own seeds for your vegetable garden, or maybe you're sowing seeds for your cut flower garden. So my goal for that is to not buy any seed packets. I'm going to go and get all of my seed packets out. This is part of what you could keep track of in your garden journal. What seed packets do you have? And I'm going to try not to buy any. I want to try to either use what I have, or there's also just so many seed swaps and seed sales around town coming up. January is a big time for seed swaps, different local organizations and groups. You know, I know that Seed St. Louis has one coming up on January 17th from 9 to 11. And they're bringing it back. Their annual in-person seed packet sale is back. So you can go and stock up on packets. And theirs are super cheap, 25 cents up to $1.50 per pack. And they have packets for veggies, for flowers, for herbs. And that's going to be on Delmar Boulevard at the Delmar Divine. And you can get more information about that at seedstlouis.org. And there's also the annual, 15th annual, actually, STL Seeding Frenzy. And that's one that is happening January 24th from 11 to 4. That's at the Sunset Hills Community Center. And the first hour of this event is basically for those of you that want to bring seeds in to swap. It's open for those that are donating seeds. And then they're also going to have some booths and some vendors there. So in the meantime, if you get there at 11, from 11 to 12, it's for all of those that are swapping seeds. But I believe there's also some for sale from vendors. But great time to be had there, 15th annual. But that would be a good one for me because, like I said, I'm not going to buy any seeds. I am open to swapping or asking friends, but I do not need to buy any more seeds. And it's dangerous. There's all of these, like, Johnny's seed catalog just came in the mail. I think it was last week or the week before. You know, I have Baker Creek Heirloom Seed Magazine, which is beautiful. If you haven't seen it, they do such a great job with the photographs on that one. Baker Creek is a phenomenal place to buy seeds, and they are local here in Missouri. So just really trying hard not to buy seeds. St. Louis County Library also does a seed and houseplant swap, which is kind of cool. So you could bring your seeds, your houseplants, or cuttings to share with your community and celebrate the National Seed Swap Day, which I didn't even know there was one. And adults and teens are welcome to this. You do have to register for this event Saturday, January 31st. That starts at 2 p.m. at the Merrimack Valley Branch, St. Louis County Library. Again, that's a seed and house plant swap. You can go to the St. Louis County Library website and go to their events and then find the seed and house plant swap for more information. And again, I think you have to register for that one. But great way to not spend your money and to get seeds and to be a part of our garden community that I love so much. We're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back to answer more questions on the Garden Hotline. 314-436-7900-1041 KMOX.
This is the Garden Hotline, sponsored by Chesterfield Valley Nursery, a celebration of his beauty on 1041 FM KMOX.
We are back to the Garden Hotline. My name is Michelle Reeser-West, Director of Horticulture for Pointer Landscape, and your host here today, trying to answer your questions on gardening or whatever you might want to talk about today. 314-436-7900 is the number to call or text with your questions. We are going to go straight to the phone lines. We have Kathy on the line. Kathy, go ahead with your question.
Hi, Michelle. I have a question about my daffodils. They are insisting on coming up in November already. Is there anything I can do to protect them the rest of the winter other than just mulching over them?
So, Kathy, thanks for the call. These daffodils are, and other bulbs are actually, it's really common for them to poke up their noses, they call it, poke up little bits of the green that's coming through. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're talking about? It's just got,
oh, yeah,
like,
they're good inch high.
Yeah. So there's really not a lot you can do. You can cover them with a little bit of mulch if you're super worried about them, but they're doing that under the soil anyway, right? So they're already coming up. They start kind of inching their way up. When it starts warming, that soil temperature is warmer, and it has been. We've had some back and forth, and we've had some warmer temperatures. So it's not a huge concern, but if you do want to throw a little bit of mulch on there, I wouldn't put a ton. We don't want to cover it up too much, but if you're super worried, you can do that. If not, I mean, I would probably just let it go because it's so common for that to happen.
It didn't seem to hurt them too much last year, except that the tips of the leaves, the green leaves, and, you know, were brown.
Yeah, and that might be the case. It might just, if we get, you know, a hard freeze or something, it could damage those tips. But overall, they're going to be just fine.
Overall, they should be okay.
Yep.
All right. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Great question. Up next, we have Neil on the line. Neil, you got a new tree planted?
Right. I've got a newly planted maple tree in my backyard. Should I be watering it during warm weather periods this winter?
Yeah, so this is a great question, and you know, especially relevant for us the last couple of winters that we've had, especially two winters ago, we had a super warm February and we weren't out there watering. We've also had some drought going into winter the last couple of years, so a dry fall. But we've actually had pretty sufficient watering, natural watering, whether it's from snow or the rainfall. So anytime our temperatures are above 40 degrees and the ground isn't frozen, we should be checking our trees. You know, trees need around 5 to 10 gallons of water per inch of diameter of the tree. So if you have a new tree that's maybe it's 1 inch diameter, it's a little sapling, it's going to need, you know, five to 10 gallons of water per week. And we've been naturally getting some rainfall. So I haven't watered any of the new trees in my yard yet, but what I would do or what I would recommend for you is about twice a month, if we haven't had a significant amount of rain or snow, just go out there and check to see if the soil is wet. If the soil is wet, the tree is probably fine. If it seems drier than normal and we're above 40 degrees, then you're definitely going to want to take, you know, if your hose is off, then take a bucket out there and slowly pour it on there. But so far, we haven't needed to do that. And hopefully, if we continue to get some rain, you won't have to. But definitely keep your eye on all of those trees, especially your evergreens.
Okay. Appreciate the advice. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Neil. Great questions coming in. We got Mary on the line. Mary, you got some tomato seeds. What's going on with those?
Yes, I have tomato seeds from this summer. I had an heirloom tomato that I wanted to save the seeds and try to plant inside this year. And so I have the seeds, and I want to know what my next step is, what I should plant them in and when I should plant them.
So I like this question a lot. So last week we were talking about Seed St. Louis. I mentioned it earlier because they're having a seed swap. They have a really great calendar on their website that helps us gardeners that aren't really good at the timing of these sorts of things. So tomatoes are actually one that I get really excited about, and I want to start doing them in January or February. But those don't take that long to start, and they want to be planted later in the season. They like the warm weather. So typically they say plant your tomato plants outside around Mother's Day. People do it sooner than that, but Mother's Day is a good indicator of when to go out and plant your tomatoes. So in order to, before you even do anything, you're going to want to get a good seed starting mix for the tomatoes. You don't need something that, like, your regular potting soil will work. It will be fine. But there are a lot of seed starting soil mixes that you can get out at your garden centers and start with that. And you'll need some kind of container, something that you can keep the humidity in. I actually have been using, you know, the lettuce that comes in those plastic containers with the nice lid on it. I've actually been using those and recycling those. I keep those from my, after I eat my salads or make my salads, I use those plastic containers because they work really well to germinate seeds in. So you have to get something like that. You know, you have seen them all over. I'm sure there's little kits that you can get for starting seeds, but, I also like to use a heating mat for my seedlings. But if you don't have one, they say putting your seeds like on top of your refrigerator where it gets a little bit of warmth from kind of the electricity of the refrigerator will also work. You don't have to have a heating mat, but they do like to be warm and kind of humid when they're germinating. But you need to check to see if those seeds are viable. You know, a lot of times when we say to save seeds, they don't all work out. So there's a couple of ways that you can do that before you use them. One way is to just kind of get a bowl of water and put maybe 5 or 10 of your seeds in the water and wait like 15 minutes or so. And then you'll come back and those that have sunk down to the bottom of the bowl are still viable. And the ones that are floating are not viable and you shouldn't use those. Another thing that you can do is put them on a wet paper towel and then put that wet paper towel inside of a plastic bag and then wait, you know, 7 to 10 days for germination. And if it germinates, then those seeds are good to go. So I would check your seeds and you can do that now or, you know, in a month or so. But those are some good things to do for your tomato seeds. But I just light, you're going to, once they germinate, you don't need light. Most seeds don't need light to germinate. They don't need that light until that the seed kind of germinates and that first green leaf comes out. That's when you need the light. So getting some kind of a grow light set up or ready for them for after they germinate is also really important that you get a good grow light as well.
Thank you. A lot of great information.
Yeah, thanks for the question. I love that one, Kathy. We are going to go to Mary is up next. Mary, welcome to the Garden Hotline.
That was Mary.
Sorry about that. You guys can call and ask your questions, 314-436-7900. And we have, you know, a lot of great things coming up. The seeding thing, again, we talked about where to get your seeds, and Seed St. Louis is a great place to go, and they tell you when is a good time to start these seeds. It also, the guide will also tell you when to plant things out in the garden. If it's a seed that you're going to directly sow in the garden, it will tell you that. If it's a seed that you should start indoors, it will tell you that, and it tells you what week of the month to start your seeds. Again, I used to do the thing where you just throw a bunch of seeds into one container and I didn't even think about when I should be doing it. But think about, you know, your colder vegetables that like it cold, some of your lettuces, some things like that you'll start, you know, earlier because you can put those outside. But the tomatoes, like I said, that they don't like it until it gets warmer, so you're going to plant those a little bit later in the year. So knowing that kind of timetable and the succession of when you should be doing all of that good stuff is, you know, for a new gardener, that it's really helpful to have that kind of visualization for me. You know, January is a great time for broccoli. Cabbage is another one that is good to start now or here in the next couple of weeks. People that want to try growing flowers from seed, pansy is a good one to start right now. Again, pansies like it cold, so we can put those outside sooner than we can other things. So if you want to try to grow pansies, you can start those inside now. And then another mistake that I would make a lot when I was starting out, and still I'm starting out, I'm still very new at the seed, growing from seed. But another problem that I make is that I put too many seeds in one kind of container. So, you know, you buy those containers from the store and there's, you know, 30 cells that you that you put your seed in. Well, I would put, you know, every kind of seed that I had in there and label them. But seeds germinate at different rates, and then they need different things once they do germinate. So if I have them all in one container and some of them germinate, you know, you want to take that plastic cover off so they don't get super leggy. And I couldn't take the cover off because there were still other seeds that needed to germinate. So if you're doing that, I would try to do like things together. Like you could do several kinds of lettuce in the same container. But if you have, you know, a lot of different things, I would try to separate those into different containers. You'll just have better results, and it helps to prevent them from getting super leggy. Which just means that they are drawn, they're really tall and skinny, and they may not have those lower leaves. And, you know, the other thing is to get your light closer. That also helps to avoid that kind of legginess when you're planting or when you're growing seeds. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we do have a caller on the line, so we'll try to answer that. But if you want your answers or your questions answered, 314-436-7900. That is the number to call or text to the Garden Hotline on 104.1, the Voice of St. Louis.
This is the Garden Hotline, sponsored by Chesterfield Valley Nursery, a celebration of his beauty on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Welcome back to the Garden Hotline. My name is Michelle Reeser-West. I am your host and director of horticulture for Pointer Landscape here in St. Louis. If you guys have any questions or comments, or you just want to chat about your garden, 314-436-7900 is the number to call or text. We have Myra on the line. Welcome to the Garden Hotline.
Going to ask about heirlooms.
Sure.
Like, what's the difference between them and others?
So the heirloom seeds, heirloom seeds are the ones that you're, if you're saving seeds, you need to make sure that you are saving them from an heirloom tomato. If you just are trying to save, or other plant, doesn't have to be a tomato, but if you're just trying to save the seeds from like a grocery store tomato, those are probably a hybrid that that were crossed with a couple of different kinds, two or three different kinds of plants, and those will not always be viable. And if they are viable, you're not you won't get the same kind of fruit that you got from the grocery store or something like that. So the heirloom seeds are, you know, varieties that are open pollinated and not hybrids. So those are the ones that you can save and that are more likely and that more likely to germinate and be successful. But they are going to be true to the variety that it came from. So if you grew a specific type of tomato, an heirloom tomato, save that seed, then when you plant it, it will become that same type of tomato. If you do that from one, let's say from the store, or one that is a hybrid, it may not, it probably won't do that.
Okay, so if I have like a bunch of tomato plants and the fruit falls to the ground and I like don't clean it up, will those seeds grow?
They can. Like, in my garden, I am really bad at cleaning things up. And this year, I actually, my most successful tomato plant was a volunteer from last year.
And okay. That,
right. But I used all of mine were heirloom tomato varieties. So
when you buy seeds, like to plant, do they sell heirloom?
Yes.
And then just like regular?
Right.
Not. Like hybrids and stuff?
Yeah. So when you go to the garden center and you're picking out your seeds, and if it's something that you want to do for next year and that you're really wanting to save seed from, then there is always a section that says heirloom, or there are varieties there that say heirloom. And that really just means that they're going to be true to form and they're not a hybrid variety.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. No problem. You know, a lot of questions about seeds and veggies and things like that. I do have somebody coming in, hopefully by the end of this month, if not before then it will be the beginning of February, that's going to talk to us more about starting seeds and vegetable gardening and all of that. You know, I, like you guys, or like a lot of you guys, are still learning a lot about veggie gardening it was, you know, a big part of my childhood. And growing up, I would spend hours. My grandparents on my mother's side had a huge vegetable garden, and they relied heavily on that vegetable garden for food for the entire year. And my grandmother would preserve things from the garden and would can things. And we, you know, would go out in the morning before it got hot, and I would, you know, tag along with her to pick that day's harvest. And so I have a lot of history with, you know, veggie gardening and being a part of it. And I, you know, it's important to me to, you know, start growing my own food and doing that. But I am still learning. You know, when I went to school for horticulture, I went to school for ornamental horticulture and didn't learn a lot about veggie gardening until, you know, the last few years. And I really love it. I enjoy it so much. It's so rewarding, especially when you start it from seed and you get to see that whole process. And, you know, tomatoes at the store are, you know, especially if you're getting heirloom varieties, are several dollars a pound. And why would you spend that when you could spend several hundreds of dollars growing those tomatoes in your own yard? And that's, you know, by the time you get soil and set up your veggie bed and buy the seeds and, you know, all the hours of labor and work to get there, you know, it's, I think it's worth it. And but it's something that I'm still learning about and still, you know, have so much to learn. And we will have somebody on here to talk with us about that so we can get some really great information. And that way you guys can call in with your questions about seed starting and vegetable gardening and all of that good stuff. We can all learn together. You know, we also have some other great guests coming up. Actually, next week we have Wendy coming back. She was a guest on our show a couple of months ago, but she's from Purple Martin Coaching. And, you know, we're going to talk about, she's going to come back. We're going to talk about gardening for health and wellness. She is a holistic gardener, holistic living coach. And we're going to talk about some of those things for the new year. So we've got a lot of good stuff coming up. Jean Ponzi, Green Jean Ponzi from the Botanical Garden, is going to be returning to chat with us. We have the Missouri Department of Conservation coming January 24th. They're going to, Dan Zarlinga from the Department of Conservation is going to come and talk to us about Eagle Day. So, you know, I have a lot of things in store for you guys and for myself and for learning in the future. If you guys have any thoughts on what you'd like to learn, let me know. We do have to take a quick break, and we'll be back to answer your questions. 314-436-7900. That's the number to the call, the Garden Hotline on 104.1 KMOX.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
At your service, it's the Garden Hotline, sponsored by Chesterfield Valley Nursery, a celebration of his beauty on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
We are back to our second hour of the Garden Hotline. My name is Michelle Reeser-West. I am your host and director of horticulture for Pointer Landscape here in St. Louis. If you guys want to call and chat, 314-436-7900. That is the number to call or text in your questions. We're going to go straight to the phone lines and chat with Scott. Scott, go ahead with your question. Are you there, Scott? Yep.
Yes. Two quick questions. I enjoy the show. Is there a special type of bonsai you would recommend? I'd like to try to, you know, keep one alive. I had one years back that died. And, then the second question is about a pre-emergence. I core aerated, overseeded this fall, and it's always confused me about putting down a pre-emergent for crabgrass. How does that not stop my regular grass from growing?
These are all good questions. Let's start with the bonsai question. This is actually one that I'm super interested in, and I have a great local resource for you, actually, too. St. Louis has a bonsai society, so if you're interested in getting together with other bonsai nerds or learning about bonsai, it's St. Louis Bonsai. I think it's STL Bonsai is their website. But okay. Timberwinds Nursery here in St. Louis, they're in Ellisville, actually, on Clarkson. It's kind of near Clarkson and Manchester.
Sure.
Surprising amount of bonsai stuff. They have a guy that works there that's a part of the St. Louis Bonsai, but they have so many different types of little baby bonsai plants. And they have like starter plants and starter pots. They have all the tools and fertilizer. They have a little bonsai section in their garden center. And there's a guy on staff that's super knowledgeable. I actually asked if he wanted to come on the show. So hopefully we'll get him on here this winter. But it's a cool thing. And I know very little about it other than it's with tiny little trees that that get pruned a lot. But a great resource. That was Timberwinds Nursery, and they're in Clarkson, and great place.
You know exactly where they are. Great. Thank you.
Yep.
Yes. The second question.
Yeah. So So the pre-emergent and all of that good stuff that's a great question. This is not a good area of expertise of mine. I do know that the crabgrass preventer is a specific, it is a targeted pre-emergent that is just for like crabgrass. And we put that down. Crabgrass is an annual weed. It dies back in the fall. Then it comes back to haunt us every spring when the temperatures get to be around 55 degrees. We put that crabgrass preventer down. And then the timing of that is important. We don't want to get that down too soon because the barrier might break down. If we get it down too late, then it's already germinated and we can't do anything about it. To answer your question, I don't know what the difference is between that and like a regular pre-emergent and how it doesn't target grass seed. I will be reaching out to Glenn Kramer from GR Robinson Seed. We've also had Kevin from Spectrum Lawn Care on. And before we get to that point, which is, you know, typically around, mid-March or so here in our area where soil temperatures get to that point, well before that, we're going to have an episode just for lawn care and getting your lawn up and going for coming out of winter. So look for that to come in the future, and I will hopefully get you some better answers than what I just gave.
No, that's fine. I appreciate it. Enjoy the show and stay well. Happy New Year.
Thanks, Scott. Appreciate the call. We are going to go up next to Bill. Bill, go ahead with your question.
Hi. You just answered my first question.
Okay,
about
great.
Lawn care coming up.
Yep.
Another question I have. I've got these little bird nest spruce bushes.
Yep.
And they're, speaking of bonsai, they're growing at about the same rate.
Right.
I was wondering, as a last-ditch effort on these things, I think maybe I planted them too low.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I were to dig up the whole thing and replant, would I want to, like, put, fill a big hole with garden soil or something else, or use the soil that's already around it?
So if you do that, I recommend making sure you try to get the biggest root ball that you can manage. We want to try to keep all of that, but I like to recommend trying to use the native soil if possible. There's the main reason is that we want to, you create this nice cushy root zone around the plant that's got all of these cushy, nice amended soils. And then once it grows past that, then it's just going to hit the native soil anyway, and then it could be a big shock to its system. So I like using, like a root stimulator, or there are other things that maybe have like mycorrhizal fungi in it that are really great beneficial things for planting. If you have a clay soil, using something like turfis or some other kind of soil conditioner to help break up the clay. And if you're doing that transplant, maybe a little fertilizer. Those bird's nest spruce here in St. Louis get a lot of pest and disease issues if you're not careful. They will get, a fungus, like a needle blight sometimes that is not great for them. They also struggle with spider mites from time to time. So checking to make sure, maybe giving those a check and then treating those for spider mites or preventative sprays in the late winter, early spring for those types of things. They also, this year, I saw a ton of bagworms eating them up this year as well. So those guys can struggle. And you are right, they do grow at a snail's pace. So
Yeah,
just have to be patient with those as well.
To get to the size they showed on the tag at the nursery, I'd have to be a vampire or something.
They're slow growers, but they're good plants. Yeah. They look nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got like dwarf Alberta spruce, a few of those, and they're doing great in the same plot. So I don't know.
Yeah, they like okay. The spider mites like those guys too. So I would watch out for spider mites on both of those.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Great question from Bill. Up next, we have Gary on the line. Gary, go ahead with your question.
Yeah, we would like to have some bright color in the front of our house as a bed plant. And we tried yellow tulips one year, and they came up and were beautiful. But the soil was so clay heavy, we only had one year of those. So this year, I was thinking about Coreopsis plants, some double bloom Coreopsis, and looking at the price of those, if you buy them individually, it would be quite expensive. So I thought, why not get the seeds and start them? And I don't know if that's a good idea, if it would take too long to have a plant that has color. And if we do the seeds, when would we sow them outside?
So if you do the seeds, sowing them outside should happen now, really. You could start, and they do grow well from seed. It's a good one. They're often in a lot of our seed mixes for wildflowers. But it is a good one, and they do spread from seed when they're planted naturally. So they do like that cold stratification. So, you could start sowing seeds for these guys in late fall, early winter, all the way up until like February. So a great time to put them down if you get the opportunity is when it snows. That way they get to have that moisture, and then as that snow melts, they kind of get into place or even right before it snows so that they don't blow away or the birds aren't eating them. But right now is a great time to get them out there. But if you get much into February, you probably should wait till next year.
Okay. Any bed preparation for those?
You'll want them. Yeah, you'll just want them to touch soil. So if you do have mulch in that area, you'll want to rake that back. It is kind of like putting down grass seed as well. You just want to kind of rake back any mulch that's in that area and kind of rough up that soil. And if you wanted, you could do a very, very light cover with, peat moss or some fine soil over the top of it, but that doesn't need that. But definitely rough up the soil.
Should I be concerned about spacing on the seeds, or you just do it like grass seed?
Yeah.
And then they come up? Or?
Correct. Just sprinkle them out there where you want them, and then as they germinate, that's when you're going to want to thin those out. So you'll want to give them space. We really want, I would say at least, 10 inches. So as they start growing in, you can thin out some of them, give them to a friend, or just get rid of them as they start growing there. So don't want to get too overcrowded.
Okay. Well, thank you for the information. I need to get on it then. If it's going to
Hope that goes well for you. Let us know how it goes in the spring.
Okay. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks so much. Another topic that I wanted to chat with you guys about is amaryllis and what to do with those now that Christmas is over, now that they're almost done blooming. So we're going to talk about that after we come back from break. 314-436-7900 is the number to call, the Garden Hotline on 104.1 KMOX.
This is the Garden Hotline, sponsored by Chesterfield Valley Nursery, a celebration of his beauty on 104.1 FM KMOX.
We are back to the Garden Hotline. My name is Michelle Reeser-West. I am your host and director of horticulture for Pointer Landscape. We are here talking plants. We're talking about gardens. We're talking about New Year's resolutions as it pertains to gardening. We've had all kinds of conversations today. 314-436-7900. That is the number to call or text. And before the break, I mentioned these amaryllis bulbs. You know, we typically get a ton of questions about these guys, so I wanted to talk about them. I have one at my house. I have one at the office. So if you guys aren't familiar with these are bulbs, big bulbs, actually, that people typically get around Christmas time. You probably saw them in the grocery store. I've seen them everywhere, but they're really cool. They send up a really long stalk that's, you know, at least 12 inches, sometimes even longer, and they produce these beautiful flowers that last, you know, typically a good amount of time. And then you, once those flowers fade, you can cut that stalk back. And then oftentimes a second or even third stalk will come with more flowers. And then we're like, what do we do with these things after that happens? Because when we get them, there's no other foliage. There's nothing except for the bulb. And a lot of times, you know, you can just get these bulbs with a wax covering, which is how I have mine. But then we get through the bloom and we're like, what do we do with these guys? So what we need to do is, if you do not have them in soil already, let's say you have the wax kind like I have, you can save those, and you'll have to remove all of that wax and get it all cleaned up and cut your stems, whether you have a wax bulb or it's in a pot already, and you'll cut those flower stalks back to, you know, about an inch, maybe a half an inch, but you'll leave some of it. And you'll need to pot it if it's not already potted. And you can look at pictures online, or you maybe have already seen it, but we don't plant these all the way down under the ground, really. We just leave the top part exposed. You can do, you know, a third to half of over half of this guy above the ground. I would say probably a third is probably around the average, but you leave those exposed up top, and then after this flower comes, the green foliage will come, and it will send up these really long green spiky foliage things, and they're kind of cool. It's not a ton to look at. It's, you know, not you know, like a big show or anything, but you can keep those in, you know, a warm, well-lit place, keep it watered, fertilize it as you would any other house plant. These guys do really good outside too. So when you're moving maybe other house plants from outside to your patio, amaryllis will do great outside. And they're fine inside as well. You can keep them, you know, in a warm place. 70 degrees is fine if you're keeping your house around that that point, that temperature point. But they do love the warm outside, you know, a little bit of sun. And it can take some part shade as well. They're in the house, so obviously they can take a little bit of shade, but prefer a well-lit area. And then, you know, keep them fertilized and keep them healthy. And then what's cool about these guys is, to get them to bloom again, you have to induce dormancy. So, you know, this happens around September timeframe, because you got to give them 8 to 10 weeks of dormancy. So you're going to cut off, this is going to sound crazy, but we're going to cut off the foliage that you spent all that great time growing, and you need to withhold water. And then you're going to place the dormant bulb in a spot that stays 50, 55 degrees and relatively dark. It can get some light, but a relatively dark environment. And it's going to have to, you know, stay there for 8 to 10 weeks. And then you bring that thing back out after that time frame. And you if you took it out of the pot, you can pot it back up, but you can leave it in the pot. And, you know, start watering it again, and the cycle will continue. It will send up your long flower shoots, hopefully, and you'll be able to keep that going year after year. If you don't do that dormancy period of darkness and dormancy, then it's not going to send up a flower again. So it's It's not, I mean, it's a little fussy, but it's totally doable if you guys want to save your amaryllis bulb. So try that out and let us know how it goes. We're going to go to the phone lines now. We have Lee calling. Lee, welcome to the Garden Hotline.
Well, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I've got a kind of a, it's not a grow question. It's a get rid of a bunch of volunteer privet hedge that has, it's sprouted out around the root systems of some very big old oak trees on my family's historic land.
Mm-hmm.
And other than getting down there and cutting it off with a pair of clippers, how can I kill it without hurting the tree roots, you know, and the tree? It's a big tree, great big tree.
Yeah, if it's too big to pull it, I mean, obviously pulling it is the first option. And then you can, like you said, clip it with some pruners and then spray some herbicide on it. You're likely going to need to spray some herbicide, a higher concentration. If you use something, you know, like Roundup or something like that, the concentrated form, you're going to have to go.
Glyphosate. Yeah. Type stuff.
Yeah. But the thing that I really recommend for this kind of a situation, I recommend it a lot for honeysuckle as well, there's a product called Tordon, T-O-R-D-O-N, and it works really well in these situations where you cut it off with your lopper or handsaw, and then you immediately paint that open wound with the Tordon, and the plant will take that back down into its root system. But it's way more effective for these woody shrubs than a lot of the other products out there.
Well, I was understanding from a friend about killing weeds, so to speak, mm-hmm. and he said you've got to spray it on the greenery, like the sprouts, you know, the leaves of the privet. Is that not correct?
So a lot of our herbicides are foliar applications, meaning that you need to spray it on some part of the plant, like the leaves. Glyphosate or, you know, those types of things are very common out in your big box stores or garden centers. But you can use those types of products in a concentrated form to paint it straight onto the cut, and Tordon is specifically made for that, and it's really great for the woody plants. And there are other types of products that you can kill it from the roots or from spraying it in that way. And obviously, you don't want to do that because you have your tree. So just make sure if you are looking for other products, make sure you know you're picking one that's either a foliar or, like I said, Tordon for me when I'm getting rid of honeysuckle or any other, you know, aggressive shrub, and I can't remove it fully, then I will use that product.
Well, I was just curious about how to do it without hurting the root system of these very large mature trees.
Yep.
That's what I was trying to not kill them.
I think that's a good idea. And it would take a lot of chemical. You know, a lot of times when we're just spraying something, even if it's, you know, like a Roundup or some kind of spraying herbicide that is for the leaves, that often won't hurt those big mature trees unless you're, you know, spraying the entire canopy and all those leaves with it. But always read the label, guys, when you're using pesticides, and be careful with those there, you know, and use them when sparingly or when you have to. But this is a good example of when it's a good time to use those products.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Good luck with getting rid of those privet. All right, let's take one more quick call before we take a break. John, go ahead with your question.
Yeah, I live out in a very rural area, a lot of farming ground around me. And I think my apple trees haven't had apples for the last 3 or 4 years. And my tomatoes, the leaves get cuffed, and they never set apples. And my tomatoes, a lot of times, they'll look fine, and they'll all once cup. I think it's chemical drift from 2,4-D and dicamba. And I was just wondering if a lot of other people are having this trouble or if I'm just the only one. It's impossible to tell where it comes from. Sometimes that stuff will travel quite a ways. I'm just more or less curious if other people are having this issue or it's just me and maybe I got something else going on. But I guess that's my question.
Yeah, this is a good question for you. When the leaves are curling, are they also turning brown?
They mostly just cup. Well, the tomato leaves will turn brown.
Yeah.
The apple leaves will
Well, one of them, they did turn brown, yeah.
Sure.
I got three apple trees. I'd say one turned brown with pretty well lots of sleeves. The other two just cupped.
Yeah, I do think that this is a common problem, especially if you're out, in a rural area with a lot of farm fields and things like that. I know that I've heard of it. That was a big problem with the dicamba back, a few years ago with it volatilizing and people having a lot of problems with that. The other thing that it could be, if it's not chemical drift, is a mite. I don't use a lot of product on my property, but I have had both problems with my apple tree and with tomato plants where it has a cupping and my fruit will drop on my apple tree. It will set fruit. I will have that fruit on there, will start growing, and then it drops all the fruit. But my leaves will also have a cupping issue, and that could be a mite. So look into that. See if if that might be the case, and you could potentially do some dormant sprays for that or use some like neem oil or something as the season goes through. And then I'm interested also if anybody out there listening is having this problem and you think it's from that herbicide drip, we can talk about it and see if anyone else is having the problem.
Well, they've rebranded dicamba and they're also using it on, it was originally for corn and they rebranded it and called it by a different name.
Right.
And now they're using it on corn also. And yeah, I think it's being used a lot more commonly than people realize right now. So
yeah,
well, thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Good luck with that. All right, guys, we're going to take a quick break, come back, talk more about plants, 314-436-7900, to call or text the Garden Hotline. It's on 104.1 KMOX.
This is the Garden Hotline, sponsored by Chesterfield Valley Nursery, a celebration of his beauty on 104.1 FM KMOX.
We are back to the Garden Hotline. My name is Michelle Reeser-West, here answering all of your garden-related questions. And we would like to hear from you. 314-436-7900 is the number to call or text. And we're going to go talk to Donna now. Donna, welcome to the Garden Hotline.
Thank you. Michelle, I've heard you talk about the service berry tree many times, and I've been doing some online research looking for this tree. I really do like what I'm reading. But my question is, I noticed some of them look like they're shrubs and some of them look like trees. Is there a specific one that looks more like the tree form rather than bushy looking?
Yeah, so you're right, and I do talk about the service berry a lot. It's one of my favorite. It's one of my favorite plants. But yeah, so they come in a couple different iterations. One is like a shrubby multi-stem version, and then there is a tree form. And really, they both actually, I think, have the same cultivar name, but you just have to look for a tree form. But Autumn Brilliance is a cultivar, but it's definitely just looking for tree form Autumn Brilliance as opposed to a shrubby form of it. And I think, the shrub form is more readily available. But if you ask, some of our local places may be able to order one in for you if you're looking to go that route. But I would look some place like Sherwood Forest or Kirkwood Gardens, even maybe like Greenscape or something like that might have it. Our show sponsor, Chesterfield Valley Nursery, is a great place for trees and shrubs. And I know that they will order plants in if it's something they don't have in stock. But yeah, it's just a different form. And just saying, if you're calling around looking for one locally, just tell them you want the tree form of the service berry.
Okay. Have you ever heard of the variety called Saskatoon?
Yes.
And that one, I understand what I'm reading, it's a little bit of a smaller tree. Actually, that's what I'm looking for, a shorter tree. I don't want a 20-foot tree if I could get it. I'd like to have something smaller.
Yes. That's your option then, because that is the smaller version. It's a great variety. But Saskatoon is a good one. And I do believe that one's probably less common to get a tree variety, but I bet it's out there. And you might try, who else you might try who does a lot of native trees is Forest Keeling Nursery. They do a lot of smaller size trees. And then Stark Brothers Nursery might also, that's an online place. I'm not sure if they do, but they might have a, they might have that as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'll look into that too. All right. Thank you so much. Appreciate
it. Thanks, Donna.
Have a good day.
Yeah, you too. So yeah, guys, service berry is one of my favorite, favorite plants. And that leads me into one of my texts that we received. You know, last week I recommended a book called Service Berry. And that was kind of on my, my winter reading list. And it's a great one, by Robin Wall Kimmerer. And she's one of my favorite authors, but we got a text that was saying that, that they read, that Service Berry book that I recommended, and they were wanting to know if I was reading any other books. And the question to that is always yes. I do love reading about, I love reading in general, but I love reading gardening books or garden memoirs and things like that. And there are two of them that come to mind right now. I am reading Take to the Trees, is a great one. Marguerite Holloway is the author of that one. She's actually going to be on calling in for an interview and to talk with us in February. I believe that's the 28th when she's going to call in. So I highly recommend you guys reading that book before she comes on. You know, hopefully she'll stay for a few segments and answer some of your questions. But that's a good one. Take to the Trees. This one, this lady was a journalist, is a journalist, and she kind of stumbles on to a group of women that do a tree climbing workshop, and she kind of learns from these arborists, and tells her story about how that goes. But she's also a journalist, so she kind of also talks about the environmental threat to trees, and, you know, things like drought and disease and climate change and all of those things. And it's kind of mixed in with her personal story as well. So that is an excellent read, and one that would be interesting if you're listening in February when we have Marguerite on to chat with us. Another one that is on my nightstand right now is called The Light Eaters, How the Unseen World of Plant Intelligence Offers a New Understanding of Life on Earth. And that one is by Zoe Schlanger. And this one's super interesting. Again, this lady was also a journalist and, you know, was reporting on a lot of things like climate change and natural disasters and things like that. And she kind of, it was a depressing thing for her to write about, and she started searching for a new topic to be her passion or the thing that she was writing about, and she stumbled on to plants. And this book is really kind of her journey and discovery about plants, and she talks to so many experts about you know, the possibility of plant intelligence. And, you know, all of this like research on how plants communicate and how plants can recognize their kin, basically how they can store memories and adapt to whatever situations they're in. Really good read. Again, that was Light Eaters by Zoe Schlanger. And great question from the text line. We also had a question, or really a suggestion, from Jim, and he was wanting to have somebody in, requesting somebody from MSD or somebody to talk about rainscaping grant program. Great suggestion. You know, rainscaping is one that we get a lot of questions about. Also something that's really great for integrating into our home gardens would be a great topic. So I will look into that, Jim. Great suggestion. We are going to take a quick break and then come back for our final segment. And 314-436, the number to call, 7900, 314-436-7900. Maybe get you into the final segment. You're listening to the Garden Hotline on 104.1 KMOX.
This is the Garden Hotline, sponsored by Chesterfield Valley Nursery, a celebration of his beauty on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Welcome back to the final segment of the Garden Hotline. My name is Michelle Reeser-West, your host and director of horticulture for Pointer Landscape. We're going to go to our text line, and we got one that came in. It's a good, timely question. It says, greetings, how low should I cut my ornamental grasses? And this is a great question, and it's going to depend. That's my answer. It depends. So we have different kinds of ornamental grasses, and just like our lawn, our ornamental grasses can be cool season and warm season. So basically, you know, our cool season grasses start earlier than our warm season. They thrive in those cooler temperatures, and our warm season grasses prefer it to be hot. So cool season ornamental grass example would be Carl Forrester is one. And warm season ornamental grasses are going to be like your miscanthus, panicum, or switchgrass. Prairie drop seed is one of our natives that's warm season. And they just start coming out a little bit later. And I mentioned this is just about timing. You just have a little bit more time in the late winter, early spring to cut back your warm season grasses because they are growing a little bit, or they start growing a little bit later. And that's kind of how I deal with my ornamental grasses. I wait until they start, just before they start pushing new growth, and then I cut them back. I like to look at mine through the winter. It's a little winter interest, gives some areas for our little critters to hang out in if needed. I know a lot of people want to keep things neat. Some of our grasses are really messy. We get a windy day and then, you know, our grasses break off and then they're all over our yard and the neighbor's yard. And you maybe want to keep things a little tidier if you have a messier variety. So really, when you are determining when or how low to cut those back, you want to just make sure you're not damaging the crown. So if you have prairie drop seed, for instance, that's a smaller type of ornamental grass as opposed to something like miscanthus, which is much, much bigger. That's going to really determine the height of where you're choosing to cut. So you want to just stay several inches above the crown of your plant. You don't want to damage where the new growth is coming out. If you've waited a little too long and the grass is already started growing, you know, then you would want to cut it wherever that is above that new growth. So the answer is, you know, I don't have one specific answer, but for something like a Carl Forrester, which has a lot of lower growth and it sends up some really tall flower structures, like that one I would cut back to, you know, maybe 10 inches, 8 to 10 inches. But you have something like miscanthus that's much, much bigger. If it's an older plant especially, you know, that one you might cut back to 12 inches. So it's also important when you're cutting back these grasses, it's kind of like the one time of year that you have the opportunity to really take care of these things. So once it's cut back, just make sure that you are taking the time to clean out the base of that guy. You know, things like that switchgrass and miscanthus especially will get over time these big holes in the center. And they always say around the size of a basketball is when you want to start to separate those. You just want to dig them out, get that hole in the center out of there, which is often really hard and dense and heavy. But doing that, you know, every few years would be ideal. So really, you just want to investigate your grass, see if you can feel where the crown of it is, and make sure you're several inches above it. So hope that answers your question on cutting back grasses. And anyway, we have a phone call coming in, so we'll kind of wait till that comes through. Hopefully we can talk with that person. And we're coming up towards the end of the show, so I wanted to make sure that I talked about an event coming up while we wait for this phone call. It is from our St. Charles Area Wild Ones. If you guys aren't familiar with the Wild Ones organization, there's a St. Louis chapter and St. Charles, but group of plant nerds, native plant nerds especially, that get together on regular intervals. But St. Charles Wild Ones is having an event coming up there. Winter Speaker Series is next week. And they have Dan Pearson, and he's going to be talking about native landscaping for drought tolerance. And if you guys aren't familiar with Dan. He directs the St. Louis Audubon Society's Bring Conservation Home program. And the talk is really going to be about the importance of planning now for future drought, exploring how climate change is predicted to affect our growing season, precipitation patterns, and what native species you can plant to support wildlife and withstand that drought. I think this is a really good topic for, you know, these big fluctuations and swings in our weather that we're having. So you can get more information about that through the St. Charles Wild Ones website, which is just stcharleswildones.org. And you have to register this event, which is happening at the St. Charles County Library Spencer Road branch. So that looks to be a good event coming up. And we have one caller, a couple callers on the line, but I don't think we are going to get to you guys today. So sorry about that. We are at the end of our show. If you guys need to reach me, you can find me at STL Plant Nerd on both Facebook and Instagram, or pointerlandscape.com. So thanks everybody so much for all their great questions today. And I want to thank my producer today, Daniel Henkamp, for everything that he's doing behind the scenes. And I really hope that everybody out there is going to have a great new year, and that you're going to get all of your journal going and all of your seeds started soon, and that we have, you know, a great growing season in the future. Thanks again, everybody, for your questions and phone calls. It's been the Garden Hotline on 104.1 KMOX, the voice of St. Louis.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.